Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we had negotiated this with the Harris and Trump campaigns for 6 months. We had Kamala Harris and Donald Trump scheduled in studio for a debate at 105. But then Chip said, hey, I need to go at 105. So we had to cancel. We showed our loyalty. We either go to the presidential election or Chip Scoggins. And we went Chip Scoggins. You are in your car. Are you off to a story? Is it a personal matter? Can you share? Is everything okay?
Football across Minnesota never sleeps.
Does not sleep.
Sometimes you get called to an impromptu interview that you can't miss.
Yep.
So I appreciate you.
No. No worries at all.
With the two presidential hopefuls and put me ahead of them. So I apologize.
No, don't apologize at all. We're just kidding. I believe it's in The Athletic where the headline was "The Full Sam Darnold Experience." and they nailed it because if I just say, Chipper, 28-34, 3 touchdowns, 290 yards, and you win the game, you say, that's really good quarterbacking. Then you watch a couple of the interceptions, you watch a couple of the decisions, and you think, okay, when it's December, January, and you're playing the better teams, or you're now in the playoffs, the better teams, can you trust him? And he has exceeded expectations. Those are good numbers. But, man, there are two or three plays every game where it is just inexplicable. That first interception, the Colts player is right in front of him before you get to, I forget, was that Addison? Or I forget which receiver.
Hockenson,
you're right. And Darnold has a clear view. You know, the second reception, it looked like the cornerback made a nice play and jumped back into Jefferson's lap. But that first one, you're like, what are you doing? So how do you balance this out?
That is, I mean, it's easier to, I don't say dismiss it, but rationalize it in a win. But you're not going to be facing Joe Flacco in the playoffs.
No, you're not.
You're going to face... and we can get to him and whatever the Colts are doing. I have no idea what they're doing. But that's what this comes down to, Chad, is can he play a clean game against a great team in the playoffs? And remember, when he came in here, what was his reputation? Turnovers.
Yep.
You look at his turnovers throughout his career, that was the thing that really has brought him down. And you know, the hope was that with better coaching, KO's offense, better talent around him, that they would be able to mitigate those. And I think for the most part they have. I mean, there's been, you know, occasional throws here or there where you're like, yeah, that was, you know, that looked like the Darnold of old. But you can't have against better teams than what they saw last night. You can't throw an interception in the end zone and cost your team points and just continue to get away with that with wins. And you're right, he was... Yeah, I thought he was great for 90% of the game, 95% of the game, but
right.
Those mistakes. And I don't even really put the fumble so much on him. Yeah, he fumbled, but he got clotheslined.
That's exactly
that
right.
You know, the I don't know, but he got clotheslined. But the first interception was just a if the first guy didn't intercept, the second guy was going to intercept it. So,
if not, I was going to drive down the interception. I mean, it was like hanging in the air. Let's just briefly talk about the fumble situation. First, I watch it, and I think, oh, God, Bradbury, you got destroyed. Then he did step on Ingram's foot. Ingram is very good at putting his feet in the wrong spot. They put a penalty down, and you're like, okay. He got, you nailed it, clothesline. That was WWE right there. And then when our guy Seifert talks to the head official after the game as the pool report. And he said, well, we were looking face masks, and we didn't see that. And when Kevin asked him, did you see this part? No, we didn't see it. How could you not see it? I mean, jeez.
Yeah. Much like the guy didn't see the face mask the week before.
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting, Chad. And, something we should probably drill down on more. O'Connell raised this. He was asked about it in the post game, and he raised this. He said, I got to continue to – basically, I'm paraphrasing. I wish I had the exact quote, but I got to figure out why our guy is not getting that call. And I think what he was saying was basically a lot of other quarterbacks are going to get – that's going to be unnecessary roughness for a lot of quarterbacks, right? When you hit a quarterback in the head like that,
yep,
you're going to get it. And I think he's very frustrated with that one on top of the face mask and not getting those. And like, now, wait a second. What's the standard here? And so – and he's right. Both of them should have been a penalty, and that clearly should have been unnecessary. Because if you hit quarterback, Josh Allen,
Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, that's a penalty.
Yeah, they're getting a call, and you could say, well, they've earned it. They're stars, and I get it. But I think that position should get the benefit of the doubt on those. I mean, that's if you play quarterback, if someone hits you in the head and tackles you like that. That's a penalty. So, but you could tell O'Connell was frustrated by that one, and on top of compounded what happened in Los Angeles last Thursday.
Yeah, that was Grover Stewart. As an aside, we need more Grovers in the world. I mean, Grover's such a great name. Just buttoning up, Darnold. I think we're just going to have to accept, as observers, media types, and so is O'Connell at some point, he's not going to play a clean game on a regular basis. That he does not have that in him. And by the way, Mahomes doesn't play a perfect game. Neither does Lamar. Brady didn't. I just think it's a part of who he is that he's got a gun on him, man, and he can fit it in small spaces, but he is going to give you two or three plays that just make no sense. And before, with these other teams, there's maybe five or six. So maybe O'Connell deserves it. It was a reminder again last night that you got Aaron Jones, Cam Akers looked better. Ty Chandler should have been watching on the couch with me. You add Hockenson. Addison's catch was scintillating. The throw was hellacious too. And then the other guy's just the best wide receiver in the game. They are filled with weapons out there. When they all are healthy, man, and by the way, Naylor is out there. They do match up with almost every team out there at the skill position. And so if Darnold just stays within himself, they should score a bunch of points.
Well, that's it. You said, he's not going to play a clean game. He's going to have these instances where, he makes a bad throw. If there's just more of the positives that outweigh those dramatic ones, and that you don't, when you're costing your team points by throwing them in the end zone, those are the killer ones. But well, I guess not killer because they still won the game. But when you're facing we saw last night though what this offense can be, because I think we talked about last week, Chad, right? Jordan Addison is too talented of a player to be invisible. Right? I mean, didn't you feel it? It was intentional last night. Them putting the ball in his hand.
100%.
From the very first play, it was intentional. Hey, we're getting him involved. And they did it, and you're rewarded for it. And now you add Hockenson to it. This offense should be a top five scoring offense with everybody they have. They just should. I mean, they've been there all year.
If the quarterback's good enough.
And he's shown that he can be.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the throw. Like, the deep ball to Jefferson, that was beautiful. The
throw
to Addison, that was beautiful. Yep. So if you can just lessen or mitigate those Darnold moments where he we all hold our head and say, where's he throwing the ball? I think this offense is going to be in a really good place.
One last comment before we take the break. J.J. McCarthy looks like he's 11 on the sidelines. When they showed him, I was like, I cannot believe how young he looks right now. Is there some Benjamin Button situation happening where he's getting younger in front of our eyes? My God, does he look younger? He looks like he should be the ball boy out there. He's going to be the quarterback next year. All right, let's talk Flacco. Let's talk the defense. Let's get to a little Gopher football, and let's get to I'd like to be listening to Alex Rodriguez, Mark Lohr, and Glenn Taylor right now, just blocks down the road. But I don't think they're giving us a feed. Our friend Chip Scoggins is with us. It's 17 past 1 on CCO.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I got Chip Scoggins with us. It's 21 past 1. I get it that Joe Flacco won a bowl, and then what a nice renaissance for him last year with the Cleveland Browns with Stefanski. But I saw enough of those games, and I saw some of this year, and I thought, if the Vikings just rush him, Chip, he cannot do it anymore. He just he never was mobile to begin with, but, man, you see it a lot with quarterbacks when they get to 37, 38, 39. They decide, I don't want to be hit anymore. I just don't want to be hit. And when the pocket was clean, man, it's a good-looking throw. It really is. But I just thought before the game, I just heard too many people this week and read stuff like, I thought, is Brady coming back? Is Peyton Manning coming back? It's Joe Bleepin' Flacco. And it was enough pressure that was disruptive. You know, did they make some, did he make some throws? Yes. But I think then it's worth highlighting Grenard. I don't know if we're talking enough about Grenard. 48 pressures now, most in the league. You know, it's not like I'm watching Grenard every play, but the smart people you hear talk about it or read, they say, you know, he's a guy he can defend the run too. You know, he primarily rushes, but if he has to go back in it, I mean, Danielle Hunter is a great player, but to use that money the way they did and get Grenard and get Van Ginkle, I've added an R for no reason. Yeah. That's a great move by your general manager.
You sound like your dad there.
Yeah, exactly.
North.
Exactly.
I thought the pressure picked up definitely in the second half, Granada started getting and there when it was 14-10, Chad, and the Colts had the ball and it was 3rd and 4. And I think they went for a 4th down, but he had his running back. It wasn't.
It was number 27. I forget who. Yeah, exactly. Wide open. Just check down.
I don't know if they put it on TV. I mean, there wasn't a guy 15 yards near him, and he just didn't see him or I don't know what. But if you're the Colts or their fans, aren't you saying, what exactly is the plan here? Like, what are we doing? Like, you bench a guy that you drafted after 10 games for that, you know, for a guy that's a statue. But I thought the pressure, even if you're not getting sacks, you can be effective. And I think Grenard, even though he's getting sacks, I think he's always around the ball and always disrupting the quarterback and speeding them up. And I think that's contributed to some of their turnovers, some of their interceptions. I just think they get quarterbacks sped up. And so Grenard's been fantastic. Van Ginkle's been fantastic. I still think they need to get Cashman back quickly because that middle field, teams are starting to expose him a little bit over the middle of the field.
Dallas Turner played 26 snaps yesterday, and you noticed him.
You could see his speed. He just has to get familiar, and he just has to get more understanding of it. But you can see his speed and athleticism off the edge. I think he's going to be a really good player for him in time. So the two talkers last week was, where's Jordan Addison, and why is Dallas Turner not getting snaps? And at least for one game, both those things got answered last night.
So I consume pretty much all of the Gopher football game. And as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, in most of the Fleck years, you have a loss where you think they should figure out a way to win this game on the road because the team's not that good, but they don't. And I was thinking, this looks like one of those games, you know, where Bielema always beats them. They're bouncing back after getting destroyed by Oregon. I mean, the quarterback who you basically declared is the greatest quarterback ever is kind of lukewarm.
Okay. He's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? When they had to make plays on the road, on the offensive side, defensive side, they did it. And that showed me something a little different about this team. That, yeah, you can win that really impressive game against USC and you can blow out Maryland, but sometimes you got to go on the road against a physical team, not be playing with your best stuff, and find a way to win it, and they did.
Well, especially after the gamble with the fake punt.
Yeah.
And you turn that into Illinois
touchdown.
Has the lead. Now all of a sudden, you could be thinking, uh-oh, here we go. But the quarterback has some clutch in him, made the big-time throw to Daniel Jackson down the sideline. That was a terrific throw.
Great throw.
And I just – if you watch that game, I'm going to write about it later this week, I have such an admiration and appreciation for Darius Taylor as a runner.
Yeah.
I just think he – and I've seen, for the last 20-something years, I've seen, the great ones, Maroney Barber, David Cobb, Muhammad.
Yep.
This kid's special in his own way with his ability, his patience, and his footwork, and his vision. I just thought he was great.
Nine catches, too, right?
Yeah. He has 43 catches, second most catches by a running back nationally. He's having a – I don't know if it's quiet because he hasn't had, that 250-yard game, a big standout game, but I just thought he was really, really, really good Saturday, and
I did too.
And I thought he was the best player on the field.
Just briefly on the fake punt, all of us, you probably leaving and have said, PJ, you got to open up a little bit. You got to be willing to throw the ball.
Yeah.
Don't be so conservative. Fourth and 12, and you can pin him at that point. In a low-scoring, kind of old-school Big Ten game with the punter who runs about as fast as the two of us, I was thinking, I think I'm being a hypocrite here, but what are you doing?
It's funny because PJ kicked the field goal from the 3-yard line and went for a fake punt on 4th and 12 from his own point.
Yes.
But, I understand giving the punter some opportunity if the punt team turns their back and starts retreating, but 4th and 12 in that situation, I would have said don't do it. That was just too. I would have pinned them the way your defense was playing great all game. I think I would just pinned it and not taking that risk. But at least he took the risk, right?
Yeah.
We've been clamoring for him to be aggressive, and that was certainly aggressive.
Yeah. Maybe a little more judicious. So let's finish with this.
That's right.
Yeah. Before you have to go. So I assume they're meeting right now. I know they started a couple hours ago. It's Alex Rodriguez, Mark Lurie on one side with their legal team and Glenn Taylor and his legal team. This is arbitration. This all goes back. I think people listening to this segment probably know when Glenn finally decided to sell the team to Alex and Mark, it was 3 installments. That was Glenn's idea because Glenn really didn't want to give up the team, and he also thought he could help him. And fair or not, I kept hearing it from my NBA sources, people wondering, do they really have the money? Do they really have the money? And they would push back. Rodriguez and Lurie said, we've got the money. But there were extensions. No doubt there were extensions. And when the last one they agreed to extension, Glenn looked at the legal reading and said, nah, you missed your window. The team is not for sale. They reacted adamantly and said, you're wrong. Yeah. We did everything right. And they since have added a lot of equity. Now, I think people are missing this on the Bloomberg part. I mean, obviously, Bloomberg's worth $110 billion, but he only has a small percentage of this team. Michael Bloomberg is brilliant. He's not going to say, I've got, 4% of the team, and I'm going to cover $500 million. You know when he'd do that? If he was given that percentage of the team. Okay, so you got well-respected people involved. I've tried to talk to a number of attorneys the last 6 months about it and then relied on smart people. I said the same thing to Johnny Kay last week. More often than not, I hear from attorneys saying they think Rodriguez and Lurie are in the right in this, unless Glenn is saying something, okay? both sides are extraordinarily confident. It's interesting. For sure, the Target Center folks, there are a lot of people that are convinced that Glenn in the end is going to get this. More of the lawyers are saying no. Rodriguez and Lori Wright. And then you get to the Board of Governors, because then the owners, if they wanted to, they could say, well, yeah, the arbitration process said one side, but we're going to say the other. The tough thing about that is if they've already approved Rodriguez and Lori, which they have, and now they've added even more money, now you're going to turn them down? So it's pretty delicious what's going on.
Yeah, and I can't imagine they would go through this whole complicated process and arbitration and lawyers, and then the Board of Governors say, nah, we're going to pivot and go back to Glenn. I have to imagine, though, if you've already okayed him and the finances and all that, I think they would approve it. So, yeah, I don't know. Obviously, this is for smarter legal people than me and you to know how to. But you would think that Glenn's lawyers are telling me he has a strong case, right?
Oh, they are. Trust me. I know that. So they are.
So I don't know how this will turn out, but I'm guessing both sides got the memo from the league that
no talking.
Let's do this. Right. Let's do this behind closed doors and not in the court of public opinion. So it'll be – but this is going to be drawn out, correct? This is not going to be a speedy process, right?
I think it's reasonable before this month is done, you could get it. And I'll say this. When I had Glenn on, I think it was like the next day, when I asked him at the end about money, that Glenn, hey, you sold it for 1.5, it's probably worth double. Is that part of the reason why? And he said, not for me, but I have to think of my minority owners. And then Rodriguez and Lori in other interviews cited that quote multiple times.
Yeah.
He can't back out of the deal because the asset is doubled. You know, that cannot be the reason why. And that's another interesting part for the league, because the league doesn't want to sell this team for 1.5. They don't want to set that precedent. But they also don't know, okay, Glenn, you're 83. Is it just Becky? Or what is your process? Because we know Lori and A-Rod and the whole team they have with Glenn. What is the follow-up if, God forbid, something happens to him?
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a plan in place for all contingencies. And so, I assume the A-Rod Lori camp are using that argument that, hey, just because the sale price change or
don't punish us.
Yeah, this is what we agreed to, right? And so I just think it's not a – something that hangs over the organization in terms of affects the players. They don't care.
Zero.
You know,
zero.
Has zero impact. But you do want to know who your ownership is and figure out, you know, how that's going to be for going forward. Because I think everything always starts. We were talking about this last night with the NFL. Everything always starts at the top with ownership and kind of the commitment and everything. So the sooner they get it figured out, the better.
Drive safe, my friend. We'll talk next week.
Thanks for adjusting for me, Chad. Appreciate it.
No worries at all. Chip Scoggins, working on football across Minnesota. He's fabulous at that, and he's fabulous with us. Michael Osterholm has not joined us in an extended period of time. We have COVID, we have flu shots, and we have Bobby Kennedy. Mike Osterholm in minutes on CCO. Immense respect for this man. Mike Osterholm is with us, involved in so many important health emergencies, epidemics, working with administration after administration in this state, administration after administration at the federal level. Among his many responsibilities, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the U of M. Mike, always a pleasure. Mike is on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Hello, sir. How are you?
Thank you, Chad. Fine. Hope you're doing well.
I am doing well. Let's start COVID. It seems to me, as an observer of the news, it seems to be a bit quiet right now. Am I right on that, or am I wrong?
No, not only right, but let me make you right three times. And that is the fact that right now in Minnesota, and for that matter, most of the country, the three primary viruses that we worry about causing severe respiratory disease, including critical illness and hospitalization, as well as death, is COVID, influenza, and respiratory syncytial virus, what we call RSV. And right now, all three of those are at basically almost a modern low compared to where we've been the last 4 or 5 years. So right now, we're actually in the best shape we've been across the board with serious illness due to these respiratory viruses.
The obvious follow-up question, Mike, is this. Why?
Well, it's a cycle issue. We see that if you get a lot of people exposed to a given virus, they get infected, they get critically ill, they may die. That obviously takes them out of the pool. But if you don't, you recover, and you often will have some limited protection. In the case with both influenza and COVID, it may be a month where you actually have protection against a new infection or at least serious illness. And unfortunately, for those who get RSV, they may have protection for even a much longer time. So we're really at that point right now where we've seen a lot of protection. That could wane over the winter months coming before us here. And so, you know, we're looking at the possibility of seeing those numbers change January, February. But at this point, at least we don't have any evidence that they would grow precipitously, and nothing around COVID is going to go back to the pandemic level. So I don't see that happening at all.
So let me stay with COVID, because you've made that point over and over again. We're not going back to the pandemic, but we'll ride the roller coaster. Is there any way that at this low, enough things have changed where maybe we've reached a more significant tipping point in this at this level? Like, hey, Dan Cook is about to come on this station. Dan, you've talked to him many times. He's with Jason now. He dealt with COVID for a week and struggled with it. So it's not like it's gone. But is this one of those moments where we might look back and say this was a changing point, or is it too early to say that?
Well, I think, again, as I've shared with you multiple times on this radio show, and you still ask me back, I'm not sure why, but this is where we need a lot of humility. And we need to say, you know, we don't know for certain what's going to happen in the future. But my best educated guess is that it's going to be a cyclic issue where you're going to see people getting vaccinated, you're going to see people getting infected, and then we have these new variants emerge. And when you have recent vaccination or infection status, you probably buy, like I said, 3 to 5 months of fairly good protection against serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths, not necessarily against getting reinfected. Then the variants come along, and they're now changing. And we have one right now we call XEC. It's on the rise. We've been monitoring closely. I could see where that could show up in a much higher level than it is now in January, February, and at a point when it's now been 4 or 5 months since people were vaccinated or had previous infection, and the two get together, and we could see, again, spikes in cases. So I don't want to minimize the fact that where we're at right now means we're going to stay there. I think that we're going to see these cycles up and down. This is different than with influenza, where influenza, we call it a seasonal virus. You can pretty much predict that it's going to occur mid-November to, you know, early March, late February. And that does that year after year. And it does it in the southern hemisphere during their winter. With COVID, we haven't seen that yet. We've had 9 major peaks in the COVID pandemic. And the only thing that made it seasonal is they occurred in all 4 seasons. So I think we're still really at an unknown stage yet with COVID. I can say it's going to come back. It won't ever be as bad as it was. But we can still have challenges ahead. That's one of the reasons why I just want to emphasize, Chad, a recommendation the CDC made 2 weeks ago, that for those particularly over age 65, getting another dose of vaccine and getting 2 doses a year can dramatically reduce the number of people who become seriously ill and require hospitalization. You know, we're still talking about 1,000 deaths a week in this country. That's very different than 25 or 30,000 deaths a week, which is where we were at one point. But so I again, keep encouraging. I got my dose of vaccine several weeks ago as another one. I'm on it twice a year dosing, and I feel like that gives me good protection. Only about 30% of those individuals 75 years of age and older in this country that are at increased risk for serious illness have gotten that second dose.
Mike Osterholm's with us. It's 144. If somebody's listening right now, Mike, and they're thinking, you know, I've heard Mike before talk about when to get the flu vaccine. He just mentioned November to March, and they're thinking, should I do it now or should I wait? What do you tell them?
Well, thank you for that opportunity, because I just got mine very recently. I think we're close enough now to what likely will be a potential, you know, increased risk flu season. We looked at what happened in the Southern Hemisphere during our summer, their winter, and they actually saw substantial flu activity, and the vaccine had less than ideal protection, about 30% reduction in serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths, and that's surely a heck of a lot better than none at all. And it's very possible we could see a big increase in flu come January, because once you get vaccinated, as soon as you're vaccinated, you get this big boost in protection. But then after about a month, it starts to wane, meaning that you lose a little bit of it each month. And we know that the vaccine by 6 months out will have lost a lot of its horsepower. But, you know, if you get vaccinated now, you'll still have really good coverage during what I anticipate the December-January time period for increased flu. So get it now. Now's the time to go. And it's a good match relative to, you know, what's floating out there with flu viruses right now.
We're going to have an election tomorrow. It is a 50-50 race. And I know you mainly stay out of politics, but I want to ask you about this. And I hope you're willing to answer. If not, I respect that also. If Donald Trump wins to some level, RFK Jr. is going to play a role. And RFK Jr. for decades has spoken out as a skeptic and as a critic of certain vaccines. Not all, but certain vaccines. Some vaccines which are highly praised, where I get well aware of this, as you know well, as the father of a magnificent child, actually three amazing kids, but one who has autism. When Bobby Kennedy again is talking about, well, there's a absolute direct link between vaccines and autism, and then I read about it, as I have hundreds and hundreds of times because of Quentin, and study after study after study shows there is not a link. The Wakefield study was debunked decades ago, and I know there are people, Mike, who believe there is a link. They believe something changed with their child, and I only have empathy and wish the best for their kids. But when RFK Jr. is saying things like this, and also over the weekend, taking fluoride out of our water, which has been universally praised, as someone who's reluctant to talk about it, does he cause you to want to step up and say something?
Well, Chad, let me just preface these comments for your audience, and I know you'll have some who are listening intently right now in terms of what I might say. I have served roles in every presidential administration since Ronald Reagan. I was on the HIV/AIDS Commission Work Group back then. During the Bush years, I served as a special advisor to Tommy Thompson at HHS in the post 9/11 period. I served in the Obama administration on several positions. I was a science envoy for the State Department during the Trump administration, traveling around the world trying to help countries get better prepared for what eventually was the pandemic. And, of course, I've been on the Biden-Harris transition team on COVID and continue to advise them. You know, I've always believed that I was just a public health private in the public health army that's there to serve who's in charge. And I've tried to do that to my very best of my ability. You know, I served two Republican governors, two Democratic governors, and as I say, affectionately, one independent wrestler as governors in this state when I was at the state health department and, you know, stayed with that line. Last week, I did something I've never done before. I spoke out in my podcast in which I laid out the challenges of this election. And it was meant from a nonpartisan standpoint, but it was meant to speak to the facts. And I don't think any of us can sit by idly right now and not speak the facts. I didn't tell people who to vote for. I just said, please do your research and please vote. But I can tell you right now that there are a number of issues that are covered in Project 2025. You can say that that's not going to ultimately be what the Trump plan would be. I know too well too many of the people who are involved with 2025 who have served major roles and continue to do within the Trump world. Roger Savino was the example who wrote the work on HHS. First of all, they would gut public health as we know it. NIH, CDC, FDA would be severely handicapped. our position around the world would be in a major, major way disabled. And that means, of course, these infectious agents that start somewhere else are going to end up here anyway. So, you know, I'd rather fight them there than fight them here. The issues you raised on the vaccines, you know, these are lives of people who will, in fact, not be able to make a decision for themselves. The 2-year-olds, the 3-year-olds, the 4-year-olds who will die from vaccine-preventable diseases. And again, I just lay those all out as factually as I can. I know that some people are very upset with me for that. I've already had, you know, the death threat kinds of things as recently as an hour ago. You know, that's just the reality. And why do I do this? Because, you know, I'm an old man. I could go and retire and some would say, well, get the hell out of town now, okay? But, you know, I wake up every morning and the first thing I think about is why am I going to go to work today? And all I have to do is look at my 5 grandchildren's faces, my kids, and I say to myself, I gotta do this. If I can't help make this a better world for them, who and what am I? And I'm telling you right now that it would be devastating for the Trump administration to come back into office with the plans that they now have laid out already, clearly laid out on what they would do with public health. So, you know, I guess I can't be any more straightforward than that. I still believe being like, you know, John Kelly, you know, all these people who have basically said I'm coming forward, not because I'm political, but because this is the truth. And what I just shared with you is absolutely the truth.
Mike, how often do you face a threat on your life?
Oh, more than I'd care. Yeah. You know, I don't mind not getting invited to somebody's house for dinner or parties, but I will admit that when people raise issues about safety, that concerns me, it concerns the people I work with, it concerns my family, etc. So, you know, it just goes with the job, and I accept that. And again, all I have to do is keep thinking about those 5 grandchildren I have, and it doesn't confuse me at all about what I'm doing.
It never should go with the job. People can have honest disagreements with you, spirited disagreements with you, passionate disagreements with you, hopefully with facts involved. But to go to that level is vile.
Well, Chad,
and disgusting.
Yeah, Chad, that's one of the reasons why I've always appreciated you. You have an audience that's very diverse, and they hang with you. And you yourself, you have people who are may be one side of an issue or another side of the issue. They may get charged and angry or whatever, but they hang with you. And so I've always tried to look to you as, how does he do that? How does he keep these coalitions of people together? And you do it really well. And, you know, some of us have tried to take a page or two out of your book. And so that's what I try to do. And one of the things I think most of all I do is just try to tell the truth. Just tell the truth.
Yep. That's it, Mike. I appreciate your candor, your honesty, and your courage in this, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great stuff, in my opinion, from Dr. Michael Osterholm, and I'm glad to have him as a friend, and I'm glad to have him as an ally in this show. You want to react, you can. 651-461-9226. Once again, when Mike's on or any guest is on, as I said with Mike, you can disagree. Suggesting he's intentionally lying to make money and to put kids in jeopardy, I find repugnant. Show me your proof. We've had debates on the amount of vaccines. Fair, that can continue. Let's see the data on it. But to suggest a man who doesn't need to work anymore is doing that, a man who's facing death threats, again, do I agree with Mike every time? No. Are there examples when I think he's overhyped things? Yes. But to suggest there's intentional malice behind it when you have zero proof, not surprising, but still head shaking.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.